Part 2. Maelstrom. Chapter 11. Into the Maelstrom. "I do not like this," Arion said softly. The command deck of the Vesalius was dimly lit as the frigate prepared to depart Harmony's orbit. The servitors hunched in their control cradles hummed to one another in muted binary, making minute changes to planned trajectories and tracking the Third Legion vessels that prowled nearby like watchful guardians. Eidolon was taking no chances.
"Nor do I, but we have little choice in the matter." Fabius glanced at the other apothecary. "Rest assured that I do not intend to accept fate passively, Arion. Be watchful and wary, and be ready."
Docking reports echoed across the observation dais, as Third Legion gunships slid into hangar bays that had not seen use in centuries. For the first time in a long time, the Vesalius played host to a Legion battlegroup.
"For what?" Arion asked.
"I don't know yet."
Fabius leaned forward, peering at the data feed scrolling along the display.
"Just be ready."
He had decided against telling Arion, or any of the others, about what he'd found in his old facilities. Secrets were more easily kept by one than two, and he could not afford to allow Eidolon or any other member of his legion learn of the nascent Primarch, smuggled aboard and now safely hidden within the secret chambers of his laboratorium. At least, not until he knew what he was going to do with it. Uncertainty gnawed at him, in a way it had not since the close of the heresy. By rights, he should have killed the thing as soon as he'd discovered it, or simply left it to the darkness. But something had stayed his hand, some subconscious impulse that he had as yet been unable to identify. He tried to push the thought aside, but it clung stubbornly to the surface of his mind. Upon returning to the Vesalius, he had scheduled regular sensor sweeps of the ship's decks, keyed to certain frequencies. If there was anyone, anything, hiding on the frigate, he wanted to know about it.
"You have not yet set course. Why?"
Fabius turned from the hololithic display as Alkanex strode onto the command deck, trailed by several of his warriors.
"And which course would you have me set?"
He gestured surreptitiously to Arion, heading off any reaction on his part. The world-eater settled back, leaning against the rail of the observation platform, his arms crossed over his chest. They would leave Harmony well behind them, but not Eidolon's influence. Alkanex had brought a substantial number of warriors with him, 100 legionaries, culled from those now sworn to Eidolon's service. They were blooded veterans of the Long War and experienced pilgrims of Ispace. Some Fabius recognized from his brief time in command. Others he knew only by reputation. Any one of them could have commanded his own warband. That they were here, now, and willingly subservient to Alkanex spoke as to the importance the Lord Commander Primus placed on this mission and its success. Alkanex studied the hololithic display. The star map rotated slowly, as the coordinates Eidolon had provided were added to the Vesalius's databanks, and potential courses were plotted.
"The planet is located in the eastern fringe. There are any number of routes one might take to reach that patch of stars. I have provided you with several."
"Yes, and most take us right through Imperial space. Even accounting for the vagaries of the warp, we will be exposed for longer than I like."
"Scared, Spider?"
"Practical, Flavius. If you were to give me a more accurate heading..."
Alkanex snorted.
"No, I don't think so. Get us to the eastern fringe first, then we'll see how we go."
Eidolon had only given over a general region. Alkanex had the exact coordinates in his head and wasn't planning on sharing them any earlier than he had to. A sound strategic decision, all things considered.
"You don't trust me."
"Do you trust me?"
"Point taken, Flavius."
Fabius tapped the controls, illuminating one of the plotted routes.
"My earlier point, however, stands. We are not traveling in strength or conducting a raid in force. Instead, we are one ship moving swiftly, We cannot simply smash our way through any opposition, not without attracting undue attention.
So, what would you suggest?
The Maelstrom is the surest route to our destination,
Fabius said, indicating the star map.
Unless, of course, you actually fancy fighting your way across two segmentums.
Alkanex ignored the jibe.
And you can navigate the vast expanse of the Empyrean between here and there?
He demanded.
Better. I can bypass it. Or most of it, at any rate.
Fabius leaned over the controls and manipulated them, causing the holo display to swell and shift in a scattering of data.
There are several functioning webway portals within this region of the Eye. I have made a study of them, and they will cut weeks off our travel time. Granted, the corresponding sections of the webway are compromised, but I'm confident we have the firepower and speed needed to traverse them safely.
He glanced at Alkanex.
If you agree, we can set course now.
How do I know that this isn't a trick?
You don't, Flavius,
he smiled.
You'll have to trust me on this matter, if no others.
You ask the impossible, Spider.
I'd settle for you to cease calling me Spider.
Fabius rotated the display.
Look for yourself. This section of the webway network stretches between several existent hubs. There are transit portals, akin to the one you used to find us, all along this route. Most have been deactivated or otherwise rendered useless for our purposes, but a few are still active, if you have the know-how.
Which you do,
Fabius smiled.
Of course. I-space is dangerous, even for the strongest fleets. A ship traveling alone, even a ship such as this, is easy prey for pirates and worse things. True, few pirates are likely to attack a Legion battle barge or gun bark, but a frigate such as this might prove all too tempting to certain parties.
Alkanex stared at the map.
How long?
A few weeks, as I said, depending on how navigable the sections are. It will take a few days to make the necessary modifications, but it will take that long to reach the first hub.
Fabius tapped the controls, causing the image to stretch and skew into a diagnostic schematic of the ship. One of the chirurgeon's limbs stretched out, brushing the image and causing it to rotate slowly. Fabius studied the schematic, calculations swimming across his mind's eye.
I was intending to make these modifications sooner or later. I suppose I should thank you for giving me the impetus to do so now.
Thank me by getting us to the eastern fringe in one piece.
Alkanex gestured to one of his warriors.
This is Palos Gaia, my good right hand. He will remain here as an observer.
The warrior was short and sturdily built beneath his bruise-colored battle plate. His helmet had been reinforced with bands of ceramite, including, inexplicably, across the visor. That one was marked with two intricately painted eyes. A beast's eyes, Fabius noted. The false eyes met Fabius's real ones as their owner saluted silently.
He doesn't talk much. Then he doesn't need to.
I'm sure I would have little interest in anything he had to say.
Palos's hand dropped to the friction axe, mag-clamped to his thigh. Fabius smiled. Alkanex waved the warrior back.
Ignore him, Palos. Our spider might bear his fangs, but he lacks the venom to do any real harm.
Then he should keep them to himself, lest I pluck them out.
Palos's voice was a basso rumble of discontent. Fabius laughed.
That has always been the problem with us. So quick to take offense over every slight, no matter how small.
He looked at Alkanex.
We do not require an observer.
And I say that you do, Alkanex said. If this is a prelude to any sort of treachery, rest assured that Palos shall have your head.
He set his hand on the hilt of his sword.
Until then, get to work, by all means.
Fabius frowned.
And what will you be doing while I am at my labors and Palos is occupying valuable space, Flavius?
Alkanex turned away. Familiarizing myself with this ship and its crew. If we are forced to defend ourselves, I would prefer to have first-hand knowledge of its capabilities.
Very well. But know this. While you may have the run of the ship, there are certain areas forbidden to you. Among them, my laboratorium.
Alkanex paused. You seem to be under the misapprehension that you are in command here, Spider.
No mistake, I assure you.
Fabius turned from the display.
This is still my ship. This mission will not succeed without me. You are only here to ensure that I make it back safely.
Alkanex turned. Another misapprehension. I am here to make sure that you do not betray your legion yet again, Chief Apothecary.
I'll thank you to refer to me by my military rank, Prefect. You might be outside of the chain of command, but your warriors are not, and I will not suffer your disrespect in front of them.
Fabius let his hand rest on his needler and gestured to Palos, whose hands twitched as if he were resisting the urge to draw his axe.
We must maintain proper discipline, Flavius. It is the key to our survival.
Alkanex laughed bitterly.
To hear those words from you almost makes me willing to overlook your impertinence, Spider.
I've asked you to stop calling me that.
And I have refused.
Alkanex's hand fell to the hilt of his blade. For the first time, Fabius noticed the curious ring-shaped pommel and the tassels of threadbare silk that were tied to it. He recognized the streamers as the remnants of a company banner, though which company he could not say. The moment stretched. Fabius let it. It was rare that he felt the urge to violence these days. His mind had slipped into a clinical rut where such savagery had little room to flourish. With his body new grown and healthy, those urges had returned full force. He longed to feel the shock in his muscles as he met a foe blade to blade, or the recoil of a bolt gun. Those things were built into him, into all of them, on a genetic level. But instead of giving in, he sent a pulse of thought to the chirurgeon, activating an injection of mild calmatives to balance out his humours. Sanguinity was called for here, not choler. As the cold flushed through his veins, he smiled genially.
Then we understand one another, he said, his voice mild.
Alkanex let his hand slip from the hilt of his sword.
We do.
Fabius glanced at Palos.
Feel free to lurk in some unattended corner, if you like.
Palos stalked to the side of the hololithic projector and crossed his arms.
Or there, Fabius said. There is fine.
When he turned back, Alkanex had already departed. He frowned and gestured to Arian.
You have the watch. I have other matters which require attention.
At the heart of the bay, the twins moved as one. Mirror images of each other. Knives flashed, scraped, and sprang apart as the two played. The other Glandhounds had drawn back, giving them room. Iguri watched proudly from the observation deck as her grandchildren met and spun away from each other below without drawing blood. Any dog could bite. It took skill to bite without piercing flesh. And Mesha and Meshana were skilled indeed. More skilled than Iguri or any of her generation had been at their age. The thought darkened her mood somewhat. She wondered which of them would take the lead and challenge her. Meshana was the more aggressive of the two, but she rarely acted without her brother's support.
It will be both of them, she said out loud. Don't you think?
Yes.
She turned. The benefactor stood behind her, leaning on his scepter. She had smelled him coming. He stank of chemicals worse than normal. Strange stains, not blood, but something worse, marked his fleshy coat and battle plate.
Will you resist, child, or will you let them kill you?
His tone was flat, curious but unconcerned. She smiled. He trusted her to make her own decision. The benefactor had always abided by the decisions of his new men, whether he approved of them or not.
I have not decided yet, she said. I am glad you are safely returned. We will be leaving this place now.
He had returned alone to the Vesalia several hours earlier, but had remained sequestered in his laboratorium before heading for the command deck, ignoring all attempts at communication. So relieved was she by his safe return, she had not questioned his need for privacy. Now, however, she was beginning to wonder why he had chosen to hide himself away rather than reassuring them of his well-being.
Soon, he said.
He looked tired, though his face was full and ageless. It was always unsettling to see him thus, after he had shed old flesh for new.
We have guests. I am assured that they will be on their best behavior, but assurances by themselves are worth little. Keep peace among the packs. I want as few incidents as possible for the duration.
She heard the warning in his voice.
They are prey?
Not at the moment, but one never knows what the future holds.
He smiled thinly.
I want guards posted on my laboratorium, cycle by cycle, visible and otherwise. No one is to enter without my express permission.
Even honored Arian?
Even him. I am conducting an experiment of some delicacy. Any interruption might prove catastrophic.
He strode to the edge of the deck and looked down, watching the twins at their play. The other landhounds had begun to clap and howl, encouraging the combatants to more enthusiastic feats of skill.
They are quite impressive. They handle themselves well aboard the craft world.
So you said. Are you well, benefactor?
The question came unbidden to her lips.
As well as can be expected, my dear.
He glanced at her.
Tell me, have you had any more dreams of the sort we discussed earlier?
She frowned.
No.
An odd question. Fabius nodded.
Good.
He turned away.
See to those matters I mentioned. I must speak with our resident diabolist.
He paused.
Remember what I said, Igori. No incidents. Not unless you are provoked.
And if we are?
Then do as you were made to do, my child.
Sakara sat in meditation, his flesh bare to the stifling humidity of his quarters. His crimson battle plate stood nearby, arrayed on its rack of iron and bone, awaiting the call to service once more, his weapons hanging from it. His precious bottles of glass and clay sat around him, arranged according to the old rites. The things within them murmured incessantly, like the tides of the Empyrean washing over the rocks of his soul. The caged Neverborn whispered to him of the horrors yet to come, and showed him what had been. These tantalizing glimpses were offered up as bribes, the way a prisoner might seek to ingratiate himself to his jailer. He had long since grown used to ignoring their blandishments. It was best not to give demons any more attention than necessary. A look, a conversation, all were cracks the Neverborn used to insinuate themselves into a psyche. Better diabolists than him had succumbed to the whispers of the warp. But few had his purity of focus. The scope of his existence had narrowed greatly in the centuries since he'd been taken captive on Urum. Since the Manflayer had cut him open and carved monstrous secrets on his bone and muscle. Since he had become home to 1,001 puzzles, each more fiendish than the last. Thus far, he had solved 75 of them. He marshalled the internal processes of his body like a warlord, seeking out and striking at each enigma in turn. At the moment, he was circling the latest riddle woven into his flesh. Microampules inserted into the lining of his stomach, each one containing a different mixture of chemicals, some lethal, some not. Each one was a distinct ache within him, and each could only be rendered inert by careful manipulation of his preomnor and oolitic kidney. Biofeedback manipulation was a common enough skill among the legions. Every space marine had some degree of voluntary control of their automatic bodily functions. But the diabolists of the 17th Legion had refined the process to a high art. The body was a temple, and temples could be infiltrated or invaded. One had to be aware of every nook and cranny, every secret river and hidden passage, lest one find themselves playing host to an invasive entity. A cunning Neverborn could nestle in some out-of-the-way node for centuries before striking out at the heart and mind of its host. Often, Sakara found himself wondering if his enslaver knew this. It would explain the sheer number of lethal additions the Manflayer had made to his body over the centuries. Some of them were familiar, but others were obviously experimental. He was at once a servant and a test subject, an efficient use of materials. Erebus would approve. Efficiency was one of the 13 virtues, along with self-reliance and ruthlessness. Sakara glanced at his armor with its wine-dark hue. There were currently 347 approved hues for battleplate within the Legion. That number changed depending on the whims of the Dark Council. Following those whims was considered another virtue. He heard the sensors of his chamber chime and the sudden hiss of displaced air. He cracked an eye.
"We are not dead." "Don't sound so disappointed, Sakara," Fabius said as he entered the chamber. "Or have you at last grown tired of trying to solve my little riddles? Each successful attempt only further strengthens my faith, monster."
Fabius nodded.
"I'm sure."
He fell silent. Sakara closed his eye and continued with his efforts to isolate and eradicate the poisons lacing his stomach. He could sense the discontent radiating from his enslaver, and he allowed himself a small, taunting smile. After a time, he said,
"You smell of Neverborn."
Fabius cleared his throat.
"It called itself the Quaestor."
"Ah, that one.
You know it?"
"Not personally, but I have read the epistles of Corazin. He is an in-between thing, owing no true allegiance to any of the great powers. An impoverished noble, flitting from court to court. There are many like him in these unquiet times."
Is it known for lying?"
"All demons lie."
Sakara opened his eyes.
"Unless the truth will hurt more. What did he say to you?"
"Nothing that need concern you."
"Then I cannot help you."
"Did I ask?"
Sakara bowed his head.
"As you say."
After a moment, Fabius said,
"They are not real, you know."
"They are both real and not real. That is their nature. They are self-aware falsehoods, delighting in the mischief they can cause the unwary."
Sakara looked up.
"That is their purpose. They are a test of our will and our resolution."
He smiled.
"But you know this."
"I know only that I grow tired of such arrogant fictions, attempting to impose their narrative over my own."
"The gods yet have use for you."
"There are no gods, no devils, just us and the things we draw out of the deep. Why then should I pay any attention to such agitations of psychic effluvia?"
Sakara studied Fabius's face, youthful now, but he could see the cracks beneath the skin. The skull would surface soon enough, and the body would wither and shrink into itself. Bile by name, bile by nature. A tree watered on spite could not long flourish.
"Is that a question or a statement?"
"Both,"
Fabius spat. He clenched and relaxed his hands, causing the servos in his gauntlets to whine softly.
"Neither. I saw..."
He shook his head.
"I would be rid of all gods and their worshippers. Do you include yourself in that wish?
Fabius looked at him sharply. Sakara spread his hands.
Pater Mutatis, father of all mutants, you are a god, if only a little one. Smaller even than the Questor, who is worshipped on a million worlds as the bringer of dark truths. But a god nonetheless to those small things that worship you. I do not approve of it, but that does not make it so. I have never demanded worship.
Neither did the corpse emperor on his hateful throne, and look what happened.
Sakara snorted.
How many times have we had this conversation, heretic? We both know that you do not keep me as an amusement or as a tool, but as someone to argue with. You know that I am right, and yet you desperately hope to prove me wrong.
He fixed Fabius with a hard eye.
If the Quaestor told you something, it was a truth, not the truth, for there are as many truths as there are stars in the heavens, but a truth nonetheless. You do not believe in gods, but that does not mean that they do not believe in you.
Ridiculous.
They cannot ignore you, for you have sent them many offerings over these long centuries. You serve them better than some who sing their praises loudest. I have seen it with my own eyes, and heard it from the lips of those who love you best.
Fabius froze. Sakara laughed.
Oh, yes, we have spoken often in dreams, she and I, your wayward child. I have seen her in the musky gardens of the Dark Prince, dancing in the silver light of a caged moon. She is beloved by him, and by his chosen heir.
Heir? Fulgrim?
Fabius's voice was hoarse, a rasp of confusion. His hand shot forward, catching Sakara by the throat. The word-bearer gagged as he was wrenched from his feet and hoisted into the air. The blades, saw, and drills of the chirurgeon flared like the limbs of an angry insect and stretched towards him.
Explain,
Fabius hissed.
And be quick. What did she say to you?
Sakara clutched at Fabius's forearm, attempting to lessen the pressure on his throat. He knew his captor would not kill him, but that didn't mean he wouldn't be hurt or injured.
Only that the path you follow now is the same as it has always been, and that death awaits you both ahead and behind, he croaked. But that when the fire comes, you will hold to your path regardless.
Fabius dropped him.
Riddles. More riddles. If she wishes to warn me, why can she not simply do so?
Sakara coughed and rubbed his throat.
The ways of the Neverborn are not ours, and she is Neverborn now, whatever she might once have been, whatever you desired her to be.
He looked up at his captor and laughed.
The irony here is that even with all of your wisdom, you do not understand so simple a thing as this.
Fabius glared down at him.
Then perhaps you should explain it to me.
No, I do not think I will.
Sakara arranged himself more comfortably, crossing his legs and straightening his back.
I think, instead, I shall leave you to come to your own conclusions, and then, later, you will return and we will argue again, and again, and again, and again.
He closed his eyes and once more began the work of centering himself. The Neverborn screeched and scrabbled in their bottles, eager to be free. He heard his captor leave, coat slapping against ceramite. He allowed himself a small smile of triumph.
The gods love you, Fabius, he murmured. You delivered up a legion to them. You opened the door with your twisted ingenuity in ways Erebus could not conceive. And you are still opening that door, every time your scalpel draws a red line across flesh. The universe is made of two parts, a knife and a stone. If you do not wield the one, you must lay upon the other. And you wield the knife very well indeed.